coming in as Lube. Hillendijk center net.
Flames bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is a Thursday, March 20th. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Text line open for you this hour if you want to chime in at 960-960. This hour is the Sports Drive. Welcome to it. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit Calgary Lock and Safe. com. And we're kicking off this hour on a Thursday with our Thursday regular. It's time to check in with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Mr. Woodley, happy Thursday. How are you?
It is a happy Thursday. I know you guys are focused on the Flames game, but this is a big one for Canucks Blues, and I guess I would argue for the Flames too, because it's one of those nights where they need a result, because at least one of the teams of the two teams that are also in the mix is going to lose tonight.
Yep, we know the Flames at best will be two back of a playoff spot when it's all said and done after this Thursday night because of that. If you're the Flames, probably just hoping that thing between Vancouver and St. Louis doesn't go to extra time, and we will definitely get to that matchup and the latest in Vancouverland with Thatcher Demko and his situation as we go through the conversation. I did want to, you know, I talked a little bit about this on Friday. So you were on with Wes and me last week, and we were talking about Dustin Wolf and you know, should he be in the Vezina Trophy conversation? And at the time, the Clearside Analytics hadn't updated for you on the last game, but Dustin Wolf, I believe at the time, was number two in Clearside's adjusted save percentage. Then you texted me that night, and he'd kind of taken a step forward, and he ended up being number one on the adjusted save percentage list. So that you had clarified that, and it was just more underlining of how strong a season he's having.
Yeah, and then they went into Toronto.
Yes.
And obviously not the result he wanted. That'll knock a full couple off the expected goals differential, and it is such a tight race near the top that it knocked him all the way down to fifth. So it's really tightly bunched there. At the end of the day, regardless of where he finishes, and the bottom would have to fall completely out for him to end up anywhere outside of the top 10. I think when you factor in everything we talked about last week in terms of the lack of run support, how difficult that is for a goaltender in terms of him doing this in his first year in the National Hockey League, the amount of games he's played, how much different that schedule is, how much more of a challenge it is to go through that for the first time. I'm obviously not telling Calgary fans anything they don't already know. He's been full value for this season, and I would argue should be in that mix, and obviously biased towards goaltenders, but at the top of it for the Calder. And, you know, I mean, he's a couple more good starts, you know, away from being right back in the mix at the top of the goals saved above expected list for Clearside as well. And I guess, you know, dropping from first to fifth is more a factor of other guys climbing over that same period since that last start, and he didn't play the last game. But at the end of the day, still a goal ahead of Connor Hellebuck, who is the consensus favorite to win the Vezina Trophy. So just something to keep in perspective for how good this kid has been this season.
Well, it's funny, Kevin, and I'd love you to chime in on this. And obviously, as you said, biased towards goalies, but Aaron and I had
dropped the gloves.
It was just like a really fun conversation on Wednesday about the Calder Trophy. And, you know, I gave my reasoning as to why I think if I had a vote, there's no doubt that Dustin Wolf would be at the top of my ballot. And Vickers made the case, and he would have Lane Hutson at the top of his ballot. And not asking you to break the tie or anything like that at all, but I one of the things that is really remarkable to me when looking at what Dustin has done this season is the fact that, you know, you take a look at, okay, top five in ClearSight's analytics. You take a look at that site or that site. Like, he's up near the top of all kinds of different metrics, and he's up near the top with the likes of Logan Thompson, who is one of the best goaltenders in the NHL this year, the likes of Connor Hellebuck and Andrei Vasilevsky, some of the best of all time. And to see a rookie in that company is just so rare, and that's kind of been the big underlining thing for me with him and the Calder Trophy. You don't see rookie goaltenders in that type of company very often.
No, it is rare, and not to discount what Hudson is doing, had him in town obviously with playing the Canucks recently, and obviously he's special. And defense is another position where immediate impact can be tougher because it is so much harder to get the trust, even as that position shifts to more offensive focus in recent years. It's just so hard to get the trust of your coach defensively to get the kind of minutes that Hudson is demanding and succeeding in. So my hunch is it ends up being someone like Celebrini in San Jose, and he'd be full value too. But I think the unique nature of those two positions, and because of the rarity of it, is what would put them ahead for me, not to mention the fact that both of those teams, Montreal and Calgary, are in this race. Is getting in versus not the deciding factor? I don't know if that's entirely fair because, you know, we talked about run support and things like that. There's other elements that go into it. But the unique nature, as I said, of goaltending and defense would to me, bolster the argument for both those guys.
Kev, it looks like Wolf will get the start against the New Jersey Devils, but I'm just curious over the course of maybe from the Four Nations break on or just generally, what have we seen from Dan Vladar of late? Because the numbers are a lot better than maybe they were, you know, through December, January, February.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a great job by the team in front of him the other night to limit the amount of chances and high danger in particular. I mean, the Rangers only had three high danger chances in that game. Yeah. Pardon me, only two, converted one. I mean, that was low event. But for a guy who's not playing a ton, not seeing a ton of rubber is also a very difficult thing. We've talked about that before. Like, that can be a nerve-wracking experience. That can be the kind of game where you make a mistake, and behind a team that can't afford a mistake, good on him for not making any, right? So full value there. I think that as we look at his recent history, he's been better. He's been a little above expected. I mean, it's not, you know, he's not up in that rarefied air at the top of the league. But again, because that job is so difficult, I think you have to give him credit for, you know, the quality minutes that he's given them in the last little while. And, we see in St. Louis with the race there, as much as the focus is on Binnington and will be tonight, the night off that he was able to take because of the good play of Joel Hofer on Tuesday so they can come into this one rested, like, those things matter. And Vladar, like I said, just slightly above expected since the Four Nations break. And that's a good thing. Like, that's all you can ask out of your backup goaltender, especially when he's not playing that much. And especially same as Wolf, like, playing in the pressure cooker of not having a lot of run support, of being in a playoff race. Those are big moments. And he's risen to that occasion, especially since the Four Nations.
Yeah. You touched on the ability to get Dustin Wolf some rest, just how much of, I don't even want to call it an insurance policy, but just how much of a luxury is it for the Flames to have Vladar playing the way he is? Because you look back, and I think it was from December 15th to that Four Nations break, Wolf had made 18 starts. The NHL leader was Andrei Vasilevsky and Mackenzie Blackwood at 20 starts. So he was getting, don't want to say necessarily overloaded, but there's a difference between a rested Dustin Wolf and one that's got to be rolled out every second night.
Well, it's the case all around the league. It's interesting that you mentioned Blackwood as being one of the few guys that's played more, and we've seen his game take a dip here in the last week or so, and Scott Wedgwood step up and eat up more of those minutes. It's just, you know, inevitably, because there was all that time off for Four Nations, it's an even more compacted schedule, and it becomes even more important. Listen, like Andrei Vasilevsky's done it before. He knows how to manage his body, manage his rest while playing those types of minutes. This is all new for Dustin Wolf. The workload is new for Mackenzie Blackwood with Colorado, and we've seen an impact there. So anytime you can get that guy a rest, and it's, you know, it's not just physical, it's mental. It's an opportunity. You know, obviously, I'm not with the team. I'm not traveling on this road trip, but I wouldn't be surprised if Vladar starting with the Rangers meant that Wolf was out early and stayed late with the goalie coach after that morning skate. Practice time is so hard to get anyways at this time of year. I know it's a back-to-back situation, those two games from Toronto to the Rangers. And like I said, so maybe I'm wrong there, but my hunch would be knowing him, knowing he doesn't play that next night, it's an opportunity to get the work in, and that work can be really hard to find.
And he did, Kev. He was out there, was only one of the only guys out there for that morning skate on Tuesday morning.
And you just don't get that time. Like, it's so hard to find that time at this time of the year. You're so focused on resting your body and staying mentally sharp that you don't have the time to sort of work on your game. And not that his game's fallen off dramatically, you know, but there were a couple low highs in the Toronto where he's a little late to his spot. Got caught reaching with the stick trying to block a pass once, and that makes him late to his seal, late to his push. Little elements like that that can creep in with fatigue, and that you can go back to work on with the goalie coach to reset. And you don't get that opportunity if you don't have a guy like Vladar there that can give you not just a night off, but an opportunity to work on your game.
And with that, again, Wolf goes against the New Jersey Devils, and he will play for the first time, Kev, opposite Jacob Markstrom. What have we seen out of Markstrom What have we seen out of Markstrom with the Devils is what I'm trying to drive at here.
Well, since coming back from the injury, it's been a bit of a struggle to sort of get back up to, you know, the standard that he set earlier in the year. And to the point where I could make the argument, at least overall on the season, and the stats make the argument for me, that the Flames are getting a bit of a break tonight. Jake Allen's fourth in the league in adjusted save percentage. Now, obviously a smaller sample at under 700 chances against, but he's been really good for them. And I will add, as a little asterisks aside, given how everyone is re-signing with their team and the annual game of musical chairs that is goaltending free agency is running out of goalies to jump seats, Jake Allen is setting himself up very well for free agency this summer. He's been really good. Markstrom is further down that list. He's actually slightly below expected on the season, 32nd in the league. Cumulative among goalies that have seen at least 300 chances. And like I said, most of that is sort of trying to find his form since coming back from the injury, because leading up to it, he was fine. He was playing well. Since then, just hasn't at times looked like the same guy. And we've seen that in his numbers. For example, since the Four Nations break, guys, and it's only a handful of games, again, because Allen's playing well, minus 8% out of 46 goalies that have seen 100 shots since then, Jacob Markstrom is 46.
Huh. Okay.
Doesn't mean you're not going to get vintage Markstrom tonight. We all know how good he is and how capable he is of a higher level, but it just hasn't been there of late, yep. Especially coming back off that injury. And when you miss that much time, it's natural. Like, your whole goal for the Devils, and this is a tough balance, is you know the ceiling is higher on him, so you want to get him back up to speed. But the reality is right now, Jake Allen is amongst the best goalies in the league for the last, you know, month coming off that break. So, and you're trying to maintain your position. How much can you afford to ease Markstrom back in versus needing wins on a nightly basis? And that's a balance they have to find.
We're talking to Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk. What is the latest projected timeline? Kevin Lankinen has put together some really good starts for the Vancouver Canucks here over the last little bit, but obviously they're also waiting to get Thatcher Demko back to maybe even out the workload a little bit. How close is Demko to a return now?
I think he's a lot closer than most people realize. They got him a full morning skate here on Tuesday, didn't dress, had a full morning skate and a net to himself today on the road in St. Louis. Won't dress even as the backup tonight. But I think that next step is coming. The biggest challenge right now is, I just mentioned how hard it is to find practice time, and that's what he's missing. Like, morning skate isn't quite the same. You know, we know, like, he gets full reps, you get all the rush work, but you don't have that scrimmage-style intensity drills where it's five-on-five in the zone, everybody grinding, and you're trying to find a puck through all those bodies. And that's probably the last piece for him. Once he gets that, and I'm kind of curious, they don't have their practice schedule listed yet for tomorrow. Hunch would be day off, given it's tonight is the first of a six-game road trip. But they almost need to schedule a practice just because they need to get him the opportunity to have one so he can be ready to go in games. Afternoon game in New York on Saturday, so maybe that doesn't happen then, but I don't think it's far off. He looks and looked on that Tuesday morning skate fantastic. He looks like the guy who was on a heater before he got injured again, as opposed to the guy who struggled to find his form kind of through late January. And I think that bodes well for Vancouver in terms of, you know, what guy you're going to get when he is back. I think there's been a change there in how he feels physically and feels about his body despite the most recent injury. And it kind of applies to how he's moving around the ice. A lot less reaching, a lot more movement in one piece, all the elements that we saw when he was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year. So the biggest challenge now is, can you get him in a full practice so he feels good about finding pucks through, you know, the chaos that is in zone play in the National Hockey League? I think he'd be fine off the rush right now. And if they do find him that practice time, whether it's tomorrow or Sunday, I think we could see Demko real soon, because tonight will be 9 out of 10 for Kevin Lankinen. And he's still putting up great performances here and there. You know, the win against Minnesota was a goaltending win largely. He was exceptional there. The other night against Winnipeg, as much as they found goals against Connor Hellebuck and at an almost unprecedented level for the season, he made some big saves on that. Was 3-2. I mean, one off Shifley on a rebound just above the goal line with the left pad, you know, those desperation battle moments. But earlier in the year, it's when the starts have piled up that the performances have started to slip. So big one tonight in St. Louis, but the Canucks would do well to get him some rest soon. And obviously with the stakes, yeah, they can't afford to do that until Thatcher Demko's ready to come back.
You mentioned it a little earlier, like this Canucks Blues game. We just had, we recently had that Flames Vancouver game last week. And, you know, that one felt like a really big night. And, you know, that was a Wednesday night game where you're like, geez, you know, this feels like it could have that playoff type feel just because of where things sit in the standings. And that's exactly, I've seen lots of the opinions out of Vancouver on this one. It's like, hey, Blues are Vancouver's biggest threat to make the playoffs. This is a huge game. Like, just what's the feel in Vancouver going into this big game against the Blues?
Well, it's kind of like it was against Calgary. It feels like must win. I've seen the sort of simulations. I think the Canucks' chances of making the playoffs dip around 20% if they lose in regulation, and rise as high as plus 50% if they win, or near 50% if they win. Like, you know, again, like at the end of the day, like none of those things mean anything. And this is what we said. I remember you guys asked me like 3 weeks ago, is this a two-horse race? And I said, no, Utah and St. Louis are in this. It's just a matter of who's going to get on a heater. So Vancouver has struggled to get on a heater since, any type of heater, since the Four Nations break. They were 6-1-1 going into it. And up until beating Winnipeg the other night, they had alternated two wins and two losses in 10 games since. So It's basically who's going to get hot. And whether it starts tonight, obviously it would help if it starts tonight. But one team's going to get hot. And the reality is the Blues have the best chance of getting hot because they have the softest schedule, not just amongst those four teams. But when I checked it last week, they had the softest schedule in the entire NHL for the rest of the season. Now, they've played some of those games, so maybe it levels off a little bit, you know, but there's a lot of cupcakes on their schedule, and they've been taking care of business, and they've been doing it in a balanced manner. They're not leaning heavily on goaltending. Jordan Binnington hasn't been standing on his head. He's actually below expected since coming back from the Four Nations. But Hofer's playing well. They're able to rest Binnington, and they're not giving up anything, especially off the rush. Like, they are not giving up the free goals that kill you, the mistakes that lead to rush chances and odd man rush chances. They've been amongst the best teams in the league since the Four Nations break in that category in particular. So they're scoring lots the other way off the rush. They're not giving up much. It's kind of a recipe, not just for success down the stretch at this time of year, but it's actually a recipe for success in the playoffs. And if they can continue playing that way, I'd have trouble betting against them being the team that gets in, but let's see how they do tonight against the Canucks first.
Last one for you. And you mentioned the game against Winnipeg where the Canucks exploded for six. I do wonder, like, what are we seeing? Feels like Connor Hellebuyck is going to win the Vezina. You've mentioned that a number of times. And all eyes will be on Hellebuyck come the postseason. Where is Connor Hellebuck's game more recently in your eyes?
Well, tonight's a big one in Edmonton. And I'll have that one recorded. So, to, you know, have that one on the PVR. So as soon as the Canucks game ends, I can start that one from scratch. Reality is since January 1st, he's actually slightly below expected and not nowhere near the standard he set through 2024. A lot of it is hard to see in the regular numbers, the sort of, as I call them, the NHL.com counting numbers, because they have been so good defensively. And what happened here in Vancouver the other night was a combination of them having a rare off night defensively, giving up a bunch off the rush, especially, I mean, surprising given it was against a Canucks team that rarely generates much in transition. It's not like you could pick him apart and say he was bad on any of the goals. He slid inside his post on the first one, which, you know, that contact with the post as you slide in with your lead pad sort of delays your body coming across and getting the seal, and O'Connor beats him on a one-timer. But again, it's a one-timer off a lateral feed from Quinn Hughes, who put it in O'Connor's wheelhouse. So he got all of it. So, you know, I mean, that's the only one you sort of critique, I guess, Besser knocking it through his pads as he reaches down to cover the puck with the glove. But those are just things that happen. At the end of the day, he hasn't been bad. And I just think the standard's so high for him and they're so good defensively. That's, to me, the biggest question is, can they maintain that defensive profile in the playoffs? Because for all the focus that went to him last year, the categories, and every goalie has relative strengths and weaknesses, the categories where the Jets went into the playoffs as one of the first or second place teams in the entire NHL defensively, they came out of the playoffs dead last, 16th in all of those. And so that's, you know, that's not a recipe. I don't care who's in net. But if you're going to give up the type of chances that target your goalie's relative weaknesses at a level that's the worst of any team in the playoffs after being the best of any team in the league all regular season, like, that's just not a recipe for success. And so as much as the focus is on him, and as much as the numbers have slipped here since the calendar turned to 2025, I do think this is largely about, you know, can the team maintain the profile it's had so far this season? And then on top of that, can he be at the form that he showed throughout 2024 outside of the playoffs? I know that focus is still going to be there. I see a lot of good signs. I know there's a lot of questions about workload. But he's the only person I talked to that came out of the Four Nations being like, yeah, it was just three games, as opposed to, yeah, I'm mentally exhausted. So
yeah.
I think everything's there for him to have success, but those numbers are a little surprising when you look at them in 2025, and they'll be worth keeping an eye on as we get into some of these big games down the stretch, starting tonight in Edmonton.
Great stuff as always, Kev. Enjoy the games on this Thursday night, and we'll have plenty to talk about next week when we reconvene. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
He is Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com out of Vancouver. He joins us Thursdays. He's our goaltending expert, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast Hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Vickers on this Thursday edition of the program. Flames are in New Jersey on Thursday. Braden Pahal, second straight game and third in four as a healthy scratch. This is a guy that played every single game up until the Carolina game on the last road trip when he came out for the first time. Is game slipping a little bit? Like, what are we seeing from Braden Pahal that has him coming out of the lineup? And for a second straight game, it'll be Jake Bean with Daniil Miramanov.
I mean, a little bit. I don't think it's drastic. I don't think it's sky is falling. I don't think it's a situation where suddenly you're questioning on a full-time basis who the number six defenseman for the Calgary Flames is. At the same time, like, does it become a Pahal versus Miramanov debate? Because I know which side of the fence I land if we're going to debate who the better option is to be in the lineup sort of night in, night out, or regularly. And you can keep it a competition if you want and flip one in, one out, so on and so forth, and try to reinforce positive results that way. But to me, the Calgary Flames are a better team with Pahal in the lineup than Miramanov. I don't know if we're ready for that debate, but I think Pahal has earned enough goodwill through the course of the season that if my other option is Miramanov, to be perfectly honest, I'm leaning Pahal. Where are you on this?
I mean,
and what have you seen out of Pahal lately, maybe, to spark this debate?
I do think the game has slipped a little bit. Like, he's been uncharacteristically loose defensively, taking more risks than he needs to. I just
not playing to his identity, maybe.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Has kind of stopped playing to the identity that had turned him into a no-brainer as your third pair right D all year long. And honestly, the more I think about it, the more I'm not overly surprised by it. And I say that because this is his first ever full NHL season. And yeah. I know that he turned into a pretty close to full-time guy down the stretch last year, but he was not a full-time NHLer up until this year. And so I feel like the grind of an NHL season over 82 games, sometimes I don't think that we give that enough credence for. We talk about it all the time with goalies, but I think for anybody that sometimes
consistency is hard.
And
you're in the best league in the world,
and to keep your game at that level, and to, you know, the fatigue and the wear and tear and the brand of hockey he plays with not the biggest frame. I wonder if that's starting to maybe he's hit a little bit of that wall in his first full NHL season. And usually when that happens, it takes a little bit, but you get past it and you find that second wind. And maybe that's exactly what we're talking about with a guy like Pahal.
So Pahal, who is 25, doesn't turn 26 to August, played 50 games last year. He's up to 64 this season. So we talk a lot about finding out what you are as a defenseman when you hit X number of games. He's still in the infancy of his NHL career. And so, yeah, and for by and large, the first 50, 55 games of the season, he was steady Eddie. He was consistent in what he brought to the table. Defense first, hard-nosed, high and hard off the glass, clear the zone, worry about everything else later. So I can get that if you're not necessarily seeing him play to the hallmarks of his game, giving him a break or two in order for him to reset. But to me, there's no question that he's the team's best option on the right side of that third pair.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, Miramanov's had a very up and down season.
Well, like, even if you want to look from whether it's the Four Nations onward, or even just take the sample size of the past two games for each of those players, it's not as if Miramanov, is playing lights out and is forcing himself into the lineup. Like, by and large, his numbers are equal to or worse than what we've seen from Pahal in terms of Corsi 4 percentage, in terms of high danger chances against, so on and so forth, scoring chances against, so on and so forth. To me, Pahal brings something into your lineup that you don't have an abundance of on the blue line, whereas Miramanov is kind of like, what would you say that you do that adds to this blue line core that somebody else doesn't already do, and for the most part at a better level? Because Pahal's that physical state. When he's on his game, when he's playing on brand, he's physical. He doesn't necessarily give up a whole lot, and it's just get the puck out of the zone. Whereas to me, Miramanov's not really a defensive defenseman. He's not really an offensive defenseman. He's not necessarily a puck-moving defenseman. So in terms of identity, when Pahal's on his game, provides something different maybe from the other five to a certain degree. Whereas Miramanov, when he's on his game, is still probably your third or fourth best offensive defenseman, third or fourth best puck mover, and probably your fifth or sixth best defensive defenseman.
Yeah, probably fair. Curious to see how long the Paul not being in the lineup thing, because I wonder if as much as anything, yeah, his game has dipped and hasn't been as good lately, but also just trying to give him a little bit of rest.
Or maybe there's something nagging too. Like, that's the one thing I'm always kind of hesitant on criticizing players for. Is like, go back to the 2 years ago, was it? Mangiapane had a very down year. And then 2 weeks, a month after the end of the regular season, oh, major shoulder surgery. And then you talk to him at the Italian Open in August. It's like, oh, yeah, I got hurt in the first week of the season and played through an injury that required surgery for 80 games. I'm not saying this is the case. I'm not saying this isn't the case. It's just a lot of stuff happens that you don't necessarily know, which makes me hesitant. But at the same time, all things being equal, Pahal's definitely my number six on this team.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll see what happens next year with some of the blue line. And some of their decisions. We'll see what happens with Rasmus. We'll see what happens with Joel Hanley. Wouldn't be a surprise if they decided to part ways with Hanley, as good as he's been, which I know it sounds cold when you say that, but he'll be, what, 34 for most of next season. I think you probably can shake his hand at the end and say, hey, where would we have been without you this year? But our goal is to get younger, so we're going to continue to get younger. And, you know, you've done yourself a lot of favors, and you'll probably get lots of love in free agency.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see what it looks like next year. If they decide to part ways with Hanley, that opens up a door for a free agent signing if they want to go younger, but also opens up the door for legitimately Solovyov and or Kuznetsov to fight in training camp for a spot, which I know they really want. Like, they would like to have one of those two guys, if not both, in the NHL next year, if they earn it, and if they have the camp to prove it.
Well, with that too, Parekh's a wild card. You don't know the steps that Brustevich might take over the course of the summer coming into camp as well.
And Anderson, right? Anderson's a big-time wild card in terms of what the decision is there. And honestly, on the Rasmus front, I would not be surprised either way. I would not be surprised if they extended and got to a deal. But I would be, I think at this point, the way things have gone and just kind of what you're hearing in terms of where things might be future-wise, would not be a surprise either if between now and next year's trade deadline, or I guess between the summer and next year's trade deadline, there was a trade that happens. I would be equally unsurprised either way. And if you were to ask me right now, hey, what do you think? I probably would have been like 65-35 a couple months ago. Not so much what I believe, but in terms of like what I think is going to happen. A couple months ago, I probably would have been 65-35, maybe 70-30 that Anderson stays and extends. Yeah. I would say I'm about 50-50 right now, and I honestly think it could go either way this summer on that front. So,
it's the one of the biggest questions over the course of the next two-ish seasons that I have is, what does this defense look like when you've got young players ready to mature and claim a spot on this blue line? Forwards, I think, are a little further away. I mean, they had an absolute smash of a 2024 draft when it comes, well, defensemen as well, but when it comes to forwards. But I'm curious with what we've seen in the American Hockey League with Kuznetsov and Solovyov, as you mentioned, with Parekh and a guy that's not eligible for the American Hockey League next season. I'm curious what this defense looks like in 2 years.
Parekh, Muse, Brustevich, plus the future of Anderson. Yeah. But what does Ball's contract extension look like?
Right.
There's only, right now, if you're to say,
there's only two guys you can lock in really right now. Is that fair?
Uyghur, Ball. And I'd lock in Parekh too. But he's not on the roster right now. But like roster,
yeah,
right
I'm
now,
talking
yeah.
today versus 2 years from
Uyghur
now.
Uyghur and Ball, that would be it. Because I am quite confident they'll come to some sort of agreement, whether it's a short or a longer term extension, that they'll get something done with Ball. Like, I've no doubt there. My feel is that they probably go 5 or 6 years when it's all said and done on Kevin Ball. And I think that's probably the best course of action for the team. Uyghur's locked up and feels like future captain material right now, especially with Anderson's status up in the air and Uyghur being the guy that has Uyghur and Huberto have the most term on their deals right now. If you ask me who takes over for Michael Backlund when Michael decides that his career is done, and by no means do I think that's in the immediate future either, because he's still as in shape and able to play as he's ever been.
And
maybe not right this instant as he's injured.
But like by his absence, his importance to the team is very evident. It's not as if it's diminished over the course of the last couple of seasons.
Yep.
If anything, the injury has highlighted how important he is to this group.
But at some point, Michael Backlund will no longer be on the team. And at some point, they'll need a new captain. And feels like Mackenzie Uyghur is that guy going forward. So, hey, good hour on Flames Talk. Lots to get into. Thanks to Kevin Woodley for kicking it off. We got into lots around the league and plenty of Flames goaltending chat with Kevin Woodley this hour on Flames Talk. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Cam Hughes, Taylor Dingman, our outstanding producers, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this has been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.